pray Vajradhara to Loka Moloka, Vajra Nila, Lord of Dhamma Yavoka, Lord of the Eastlands, Omniscient Karmapa, holders of the four great and eight lesser lineages, Sri Kung Tatlung Sopa, Nisri, Glorious Rupa, and so on, masters of the profound path of Mahamudra, unequal protectors of beings without Prokajan, Kaju Lamas, I supplicate you, grant your blessing that I follow your example and hold your lineage. Detachment is the foot of meditation as is top. To this meditator who is not attached to food and wealth, who cuts the ties to this life, grant your blessings that I have no attachment to honor or gain. Devotion is the head of meditation as is top. The Lama opens the gate to the treasury of oral instructions. To the meditator who always supplicates you, grant your blessings that genuine devotion is born within. Non-distraction is the body of meditation as is taught. Whatever arises is fresh, the nature of realization. To the meditator who rests simply in naturalness, grant your blessings that meditation is free from conceptualization. The nature of God is Dharmakaya as is taught. Nothing whatsoever, it arises as everything. To the meditator for whom all arises in unceasing play, grant your blessings that I realize samsara and nirvana undivided. Through all my births may I not be separated from the perfect Lama, and always enjoy the splendor of Dharma, perfecting the qualities of the paths and stages. May I swiftly attain the state of Ajahnara. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Supreme Sangha. Through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Supreme Sangha. Through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Supreme Sangha. Through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. The earth is perfumed with scented water and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun, and the moon. Imagining this as the Buddha field, I offer it so that all beings may enjoy that pure realm. In accordance with the capabilities and the diverse aspirations of sentient beings, I ask you to turn the wheel of Dharma of the greater, lesser, or conventional vehicles.
Jag har varit med om att 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 j Поеду голову за хер, они не могли мути, но я это не буду не делать, вола, и мы не знаем, а то он дойдет, как он не делает. Прикончил бы много, я вам дам, я 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 дам,
Pleased to be here, and it seemed that I have seen you all, or some of you, quite often in the life police. Other times, Kangol Mbuche is one of my teacher that I really think has the knowledge and understanding not just claimed knowledge and understanding of the Buddha Dharma, but truly someone who has the knowledge and understanding of the Buddha Dharma through lifelong studies from a very young age until this point. And as well as also, not just only the knowledge and understanding of the Buddha Dharma, but deep realization, a realization that you could just feel, just as he's sitting on the throne, or he's just sitting on the chair, and you observe him. And when you are in his presence. So Mbuche's great activities in the world, particularly in the Western world, teaching Dharma, touring in the various different parts of the Western world, and making many beings come to realize the essence of the Dharma, and also educating in the deep knowledge of the Dharma, it's something that I think at this point there's not really anyone equal to him. In the knowledge and understanding and the realization, as well as also for service of the Dharma and the service of the beings, but also just for oneself, lifelong studies and practice, and in the service of Dharma and the service of others, a lifelong. I remember when I was very young, somewhere around 13 or 14, Tamil Muche used to come to visit Tibetan Mukhenjin Muche, and he had often quite a few Western students with him. And there sometimes, of course, this Matthew or other translators who would translate for Rinpoche, but not. Other times when there's no translators, Vipshinsa Rinpoche would say to Tangu Rinpoche, why don't you translate? Mm-hmm. So then Tangu Rinpoche would translate very slowly what Vipshinsa Rinpoche was speaking. So, this Dharma center that Rinpoche has founded here, and you all who are gathered here under the blessings of Tangu Rinpoche and with his guidance, it's a very auspicious and it's a very privilege. One must outthink really feel that there would be no much different than the meeting the Buddha himself. Even the time of the Buddha himself, when he was walking on the earth, it wouldn't be so much of a difference. Buddha would have two eyes, and so as also the physical form and the body of the human. But it's the mind that really makes the whole different from just being an ordinary to a Buddha. Like that, of course, Tangu Rinpoche is walking here on the earth, just looking at him on the first hand, he's going to be like Tibetan Lama, but in the deep, in the mind, it's really not going to be anything different than the Buddha himself. And since you've been studying with him, and have received yearly extensive teachings on the Buddha Dharma, and particularly in the Mahamudra teachings, I don't know what I can add to it, but nonetheless, it is very kind of you to invite me to here to your such a previous evening talk. And what I would like to, in this evening, to really speak about is how we cannot afford cake. Granted, with such a teacher coming around every year, almost every year, and having the chance to meet with him and receive teachings. And we must really try to put those teachings into a deep understanding first and then into a practice. To realize the essence of the teachings. Now when we essentialize the teachings of the Buddha Dharma, it really comes down to relating with the true aspects of our lives. One very obvious, the relative experiences of our world and our mind, and the relative what already is our experience, our world, from the experiences of our mind and our world, how as we experience now, from state of confusions, from a state of strong biases of our own ignorant mind, and from the strong emotions of everything either having to be pro you or against you, this kind of a duality and a sense of attachment when it's pro you, and when it's against you, sense of aggression, and when it's neither pro you or pro yours or against you or yours, then some kind of a neutrality or the emotion of not personal judgment of any sort but stupidity prevails in our mind and in our experience of the world. And this, of course, in some ways, as many have said, if you don't have attachments and if you don't have aggressions, it's going to be very difficult to survive the samsara. It's a sort of a survival of the fittest instinct to be attached, to be aggressive. And when we have a break from two of them, then just fall into sleep. Stupidity. Now, if it's planned to actually just stay in the samsara, then maybe perhaps to survive the samsara with the attachment and aggressions and stupidity is useful, and we have been actually stuck in samsara for all this time, regardless of whether we actually like it or not, whether we wanted to stay in the samsara or not, regardless of whether we enjoy being in samsara or not. But in one place of samsara, such as like a human realm, if we wanted to stay for long with the attachments and aggressions and stupidity as used as a means or tools to trump our species, maybe the species may actually perhaps have some chance, but as an individual, one will always have to confront with impermanence and death, and one will have to die. And when one actually dies, what happens to the species, then it's not going to be in the next round, so much as you are concerned, because you might be animal at that time. And what happens to the human species? While one is an animal, one might not actually be so worried and concerned. One will be thinking about how to survive as an animal. So in that sense, you know, I can understand that some use of the attachment, and some use of the aggression, and some use of the stupidity as in a means and ways to live one's life, and there's nothing kind of wrong with that. But in general, it produces so much of a suffering, and it produces so much of a karma, and it produces suffering now, and karma that one might have to confront in coming years or in coming lifetimes. So in this way, this relative experiences that we have of our mind and our world, as well as also how we live, if it is something that is not changeable or transformable in any way, then there's no really a point to even try. Because if it is not something that could not be changed or transformed, and it's just the way it is, and it's just succinct, absolute, to be just that way, then there's not really a point to change, or try to change, or transform, or try to transform. But since that is not the case, confusions, as well as also ignorant, so as also our relation to our mind, so as also our relation to our world, and all of this states of mind and emotions that we experience in a day-to-day basis, as well as also in a year-to-year basis, lifetime to lifetime basis, is all transformable, changeable. And that's what the Buddha has actually proven. And that's what the Buddha has really shown us, how that is to be done as he did it. So, and by doing that, so how one can actually find the freedom, how one can find the sense of peace and sense of state of peace plus bliss. So, when we can do something, and when there's the whole layout of the manual of how to do it, so, and by doing it, so, if we can actually see the benefits and the results right away, as to find some more deeper kind of a understanding of how one's mind works, how one's mind's relation with the world from a negative to a positive could be changed and transformed, and from there how that whole experience becomes much happier as an experience. One doesn't have to be succumbed to the always same outcome of pain and suffering. One doesn't have to be always confused. One doesn't always have to be so much as if things are out of control. So when one can actually have that small experiences of peace and bliss and happiness by working with one's mind and gaining some understanding and gaining some sense of perspective of how to work with one's mind and also how to work one's mind with the world, and also from there how even with the circumstances that are much of the time generally normally seemingly threatening and challenging, but those very circumstances or challenging, threatening aspects of the circumstances could be kind of comprehended with the practice mind and with the practice attitude, and thus those very circumstances could be incorporated into the path and see it as a not only just make believe, see it as a positive, but really experience it as a positive contribution or factor contributor to one's own growth of a more strength, more sort of a sense of confidence, more sense of immunity to the state of confusions and the state of negative emotions as a response, but rather confusions being through those circumstances, through those difficult times, through those challenging times, how one can actually have more result of overcoming one's negative emotions that one has been prior to being engaged in the Dharma, one has never had any knowledge, neither do had any kind of tools to work with. So in this way, you know, really can gain some sense of a self confident and faith in the practice of the Dharma, and taking the even difficult circumstances as in a onto the path, how if that can work, then normal circumstances or other circumstances that is not challenging or threatening, of course one can work with them much more in a sort of work with them with much more ease and relatively less kind of feeling of being put on the spot, more sort of, you know, just simply as whatever the practice of the relative aspect of the Buddha Dharma that one is actually working with, whether it is to be, let's say, to be a kinder of a person, to be a more of an sympathetic of a person towards others, or compassionate as a person, or whether it is someone who is actually trying to be both kinder and sympathetic or compassionate person, but to do it so, those, you know, one is kind of looking into the, not just the how things appears, but what is the behind how things appears. When somebody is, let's say, upset and angry at you and shouting at you, the natural, of course, our response is going to be, you know, to feel defensive and to feel immediately sort of think, okay, you know, this person is wrong and this person is trying to hurt me or do some damage to me. One must protect oneself and one must really feel right away whatever the power that you have in your own means to sort of respond, and the response most of the time is going to be aggression to aggression and aggression to aggression turns into violence. But as in someone who is trying to be kinder of a person or more of a sympathetic of a person or compassionate of a person, then of course that intention is there, yes, and that practice of being kind and compassionate as in a sort of action that is always, of course, one is being said good thing as in our human qualities, and we have always sort of taught to be that way or cherished that way. But when a situation is met like that, it is difficult to be, you know, however you are taught, whatever is being said for what one must do as a good person, in there, just the tight situation of having to meet the immediate experience, mind often sort of succumbs to its confusions, and it's a kind of a natural instinct, or natural, not even an instinct, but habitual response, which is to sort of, you know, get emotional and get angry and aggressive. But as a practitioner, you know, of course we are practicing loving kindness and compassion, but even aside from the loving kindness practice and the compassion practice, in a situation like this, you know, there is a much encouragement for us to see beyond this sort of first-hand take, what's really happening. Why is, you know, someone shouting at you? Why is someone shouting at you? It's because someone is upset with you. Why is someone upset with you? Because someone is hurt. Why is someone hurt? Because someone is maybe perhaps, you know, has this feeling of self. And this self is being deeply kind of a, you know, cherished. And that that kind of, you know, self and cherishing the self, and wanting to protect the self, it has nothing to do with you. It has been going on for countless of lifetimes, and it's also going on this way, even in this life, for the whole time. And because of that habit, is so strong. And this time, of course, you as in a one incident that showed up as in a somewhat of an upsetting or threatening to that self. And that individual's personal habit of feeling so incredibly vulnerable in a sense, when that habit of any kind of upsetness, any kind of a threat comes, any kind of a, you know, unwanted thing comes, person even is not in any kind of possession of himself or herself, but succumbs to the habit, you know, of reacting with the upset mind. And from the upset mind, then the shouting comes. And then from the shouting, you know, you are now experiencing, you know, your end of the your end of that kind of response. And if you look at it in this way, Of course, meanwhile, there's going to be this sort of, again, even in ourselves, the urge to respond negatively, you know, urge to sort of, you know, be angry at the person and see it as an unfair for someone having shouted at you, or someone having had upset, have someone being upset with you, or someone sort of, you know, going off the line that far. But there's no any reasons. There's no any rational reasons there. This is all happening out of confusion. This is all happening out of control. This is all happening out of person who actually you're seeing it as a responsible or somewhat accountable person is not responsible. Person is not countable. Even one wants to be, you know, countable, person is out of control. Person is, you know, out of not in possession of oneself. So it's only, you know, you could feel for the person. Feel for the person, really. And you could feel for the person's pain and the person's vulnerability. And you could feel for the person's sort of a sense of losing one's own kind of any poise or self-control when one is upset and angry. And person is actually much more in a kind of a worse situation of a pain than you yourself. Being in the other end, in the receiving side. So when you actually, not just as in a sort of some kind of made-believe to fix your